To order, first bill we will have a public hearing and possible work session on is Senate Bill 339. Call forward our regular Ken Murphy, Director of Office of Emergency Management. Welcome back.
Thank you, Chair Boone, Chair Berger, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ken Murphy, the Director of Office of Emergency Management, and I had really no prepared testimony or anything. I just wanted to, for the new members, especially of the committee, that this piece of legislation was derived out of the interim committee during last year to try and promote and give emergency management different venues to advertise, if you will, to the citizens of the state of Oregon. And so this is one of the ways that we looked at it. I also had the opportunity to print a small statement on refund checks that will go out to the citizens of Oregon. And this is all part of taking advantage of every possible way that we can to get the message out to the citizens of Oregon to be better prepared in any way, shape, or form. So I think it's a very good thing to do and a very positive thing, and it's something that is a vehicle that reaches a great number of citizens in the state of Oregon. That's all I have.
Questions for the director? Now, Representative Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ken, for being here again. Have you put together an entire program for public awareness? Because I'm thinking of numerous ones that independent periodicals and especially our cable television, you know, it'd be wonderful to have a story about what we have as emergency preparedness and who to call if they'd like to know how prepared we are.
Chair Boone, Chair Berger, Representative Nelson, yes, I have, but in all honesty, it's not very good because I've never had a public affairs person, and I'm not trained, so I kind of learn as I go. And during the interim, the emergency board did grant some money for me to hire on a limited duration a public affairs person to specifically work on a crisis communications plan, which to me is a very, very key element about educating citizens and visitors. And we have various different campaigns and other ideas that, of course, you know, would cost some money. But we have many different avenues, internet, and advertising firms. We get a lot of different PSA products from the Department of Homeland Security that we can tailor for our needs. So this person right now is on board in my organization, truly trying to get the crisis communications plan built, but also in that is developing messages in different languages and to try and deal with the threats that are relative to the different parts of Oregon.
Senator George.
Gary.
Ken O'Liney, it says the Office of Emergency Management may prepare, so you're not absolutely obligated to. So it would probably be in negotiation with the Secretary of State to make it as lessen the impact of putting it in if you decided to do it.
Chair Boone and Chair Berger, Senator George, correct. It gives me the option, but I'm quite sure that I will negotiate as hard as I possibly can to make sure it gets in there with a succinct message. You know, I surely don't want to take up a lot of space and that type of thing. But, yeah, we can definitely negotiate this with the Secretary of State.
Madam Chair, if you'd indulge me, I have a couple of questions. Mr. Murphy, I presume that you selected the voter's pamphlet because it reaches the most Oregonians.
Chair Boone and Chair Berger and Senator Johnson, that was one that we worked with, and Senator Gordley at the time on the committee had recommended, and we actually recommended many different ones, but that's the one that we turned into this as one of the ways to get to the greatest population.
Again, a couple of follow-ups, and this is another one of these instances where those of us that didn't have the benefit of the interim testimony are hoeing a row you guys have already been up and down. So it's got to be annoying to you, but I feel like I've stepped into the middle of a conversation that's been going on for 18 months and I haven't been part of. I'm trying to figure out, you have chosen a vehicle. Did you guys talk about income tax forms?
We talked about, I'll let you pop in too, but we talked about a lot of different venues, phone books, everything, and it was well vetted throughout that discussion. I'm sure we could get the information to you about what all was discussed.
That would be really helpful because I'm struggling to understand why it is that the voter's pamphlet is suitable for this. I think there's an expectation that the voter's pamphlet is for a very precise purpose, and there may be lots of laudable things that you'd want to include in a voter's pamphlet. Where does the Secretary of State's office draw the line? Emergency management is a worthy thing. There may be other sort of PSA-type stuff. And the voter's pamphlet right now is able to be produced and paid for the way it is through the huge economies that the Secretary of State's office has realized. They've carved the margins down to nothing. Some people would argue the type is so small you can't see it. I would be one
That's
of
true.
Those. I'm being facetious. The Secretary of State's office has worked like dogs to minimize the cost of that publication. And I'm just trying to figure out where do we begin to draw the line insinuating even very worthy things into what is ostensibly an election publication that informs Oregonians about electoral activities and not about how to escape from a tsunami. And I'm going to have a lot of trouble being convinced that, again, absent hearing the very comprehensive testimony that you guys heard, but I just have a really hard time subscribing to the fact that the voter's pamphlet, where people are looking at it for specific information, is the best vehicle to provide emergency management. And are you going to tailor it so that just the voter's pamphlet on the coast talks about tsunamis? Because that's not a big deal over in Malheur County. And so I'm just trying to figure out how's this work and why is this the right vehicle. And in case it's not abundantly obvious, I'm not real warm on the idea.
Chair Boone, Chair Berger, Senator Johnson, I won't say it's the best vehicle, but it's one of the numerous best vehicles to get there. And part of this was the intent to provide some general preparedness messaging for every citizen, not just tsunamis, not just forest fires, but a lot of the basic things about what a citizen, a family, a community could do to be better prepared to help themselves.
Follow up one last time, and then I'll quickly...
And I'll even throw something in after you're finished, too.
If that's the idea, and I'm being... this is going to sound like I'm teasing you, and I'm not, but how about a milk carton? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out, are there more appropriate vehicles? If you're trying to talk to families about in Oregon about having a 72-hour kit, very simple message could actually fit in a pretty small, narrow area. I'm sure that some of the milk producers, and I represent a lot of them, would be happy to try to help get that messaging out. I just am not convinced that the voter's pamphlet is the most attractive vehicle to get people to read the messaging and to have some kind of more uniform messaging when the parts of our state are so varied. And I'm wondering about the production costs of doing multiple messaging. I just don't get it.
There is a fiscal on this, and it's in your packet, should be. Oh, we just got it. Okay, it's the primary election would be $10,545 and $6,010 in a general election. The budget for OEMs, publicity, and publications in the 2003-05 and 2005-07 biennia have been less than $2,000 and $1,000 general fund, respectively. And again, this was vetted pretty extensively, and we did talk about milk cartons. We talked about having the voter's pamphlet thing be a tearaway, because my concern on that particular piece was that people may recycle them or throw them away after the election. But the point is, as Director Murphy has stated, is as wide a population as possible, and that was one venue, one idea, along with many others. So, Senator Berger, question.
Yes, and I think if the voter's pamphlet was the only venue that we were talking about, we have to put this because it's one of many. The idea was to get the message out in as many places as absolutely possible. So that doesn't mean this just happens to be one of many. And I would comment to Senator Johnson, I'm not annoyed, but I do feel that every member of the last of the interim committee were willing to continue to serve. And they were replaced by a number of new people, which that's fine too, except that it's very difficult to get you up to speed on months and months of work. And so, and I know that we had a great committee that gave a lot of time, heard a lot of testimony, and tried to make decisions. But I think this was just simply one of many things that the committee wanted to do to get the message out to the public. It is very difficult in this day and time with as much messaging as people get through the radio and the television and two or three newspapers a day to get their attention. And besides that, many people don't think it's going to happen to them. And so what we have to do is constantly reiterate what you need to do, because no one is going to come and help you when something happens. There's just not going to be anybody there. And so I can understand the people trying to look at all of these interim bills, but it is really vital that we make decisions, and that particularly the structure of the emergency management that you're going to get to in these bills that change things, it is vital that we get these bills out and get them passed on the floor of the House in case anything does happen.
And I think that that is, okay, we've got a couple more here. I think that's exactly what I'd like to say to the new members, too. Again, stressing, please read the materials provided to you. I think we've provided agendas now. And if you have questions about particularly the bills that are coming up, our pre-session filed bills, we worked for 18 months developing this package. And it's a lot of stuff. I have, this is only my newest notebook, but I have four other ones this size, maybe five, I'm not sure, on all the handouts and information provided to us throughout the interim committee time that we spent here. And so every single bill that we put forward was a committee decision, interim committee decision, and figured that it was as important as possible to push it to the front of our agenda for this particular committee to start out. We haven't even started on ocean policy yet. So, but we decided to put our emergency preparedness first because it could happen at any time, and we want to be prepared. So also, I'm going to ask Gary George now, Senator George.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And then Nelson, and then Shuffler.
I'm probably one of the most able people to cut somebody a new one when I think we're not getting the facts. But I need to arise in defense of Ken, because this wasn't his idea. This was our idea. This was Senator Gordley's idea. This was Gary George's idea. And the idea was maximize everything you have. If I was going to rip a new one, it would be the Secretary of State for out here trying to undermine this bill every way that they can. They were in my office the other day, and I said, I have looked at that voter's pamphlet, and I'm going to tell you what, if we have to buy an ad for a candidate or an issue and put the doggone message in there, we'll do it. There's no reason, with all that wasted space in that voter's pamphlet, you cannot put in a message that says, think safety. And so, in Ken's defense, is not his idea. It is the committee's idea. So, other than that, I'm tirated out.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Boone.
I got confused.
Go ahead. Mr. Murphy, I'm just wondering, in the interim, did the committee ever recommend that together you put together a public affairs budget together to maximize the communication to 3.5 million citizens across the state?
Chair Boone, Chair Berger, and Representative Nelson, we didn't get into specifics, but I have provided Chair Boone with some information about some more specific financial issues that it would require to really take a look at the full spectrum of advertising or messaging. And because we, over the years, have really tried to take advantage. We have done milk cartons. We have done grocery bags. We've done flyers and electrical bills. many, many different venues, but those things, you know, do cost money, and so we've had to be very judicious in doing that. So we have a pretty good idea on a lot of them and just constantly looking for new opportunities that are out there.
Follow-up. Thank you, Chair Boone. I guess what I want to know is, in this budget this year, is there a sum of money allocated by the governor with which we can let every citizen know they have this emergency preparedness program?
Chair Boone and Chair Berger, Representative Nelson, to the best of my knowledge, no.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Representative Shockley.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on a committee with somebody that has thyroids besides me. Anyway. I've shared my concerns with both co-chairs, and I've said if they want to move this out, I'll vote for it. But there's nothing in here that says you have to do it every election. And if it were, you know, on occasionally part of a bigger campaign, and I'm one of those strange, my wife thinks I'm weird, I save all those voters pamphlets, I like to look back in. But most people don't, and I think in the long run, it may not be the wisest use to burn money, and may not be the most appropriate place to do it. I share some of the Secretary of State's concerns about that, but if it was some of a larger campaign on occasion to do it, I would put it in phone books. So, by the way, everybody has a phone book, and I like the income tax return because everybody opens them. So that's. But if the co-chairs want this out, I'll vote for it.
Not everybody else. I bet there are a few who don't. But thank you, Representative. Does anybody else have Senator George Larry?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I got to be careful now because now I know this comes from such an inspired source. I got to be more careful what I say. As somebody who's written way too many voter pamphlets and know that nobody reads my writing when I'm done, my concern is that we're spending money in a place where people, they're getting so big, the voter pamphlets are getting so big. Has there been any discussion at all during this, and I don't care really who answers the question, but is there any discussion about the impact with the size of the voter pamphlets now? Has that been a discussion? Because at this point, I think Secretary of State's question about the appropriateness and then the cost, there may be a more appropriate use of $10,000.
They're here, and they'll be up next. And, yeah, there was a lot of discussion about that, too.
Okay, and then one final thing, and just so I understand. I know you guys looked at all these things. Things like the DMV renewal license, all that stuff, it seemed like to me that that'd be a much more efficient way, and it's separated out, and you could actually send us a separate card. It seems like such a more appropriate way to go. But I just want to – I guess I have a lot of reservations.
Okay. We wanted to do them all.
Okay.
Talk to your
Thank
dad.
You.
Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, if there was ever a document that needed first aid and emergency preparedness information, I would submit it would be the income tax form.
Ooh, touché. Well, thank you, Ken, very much. And I'll call up John Lindback, a good Swedish guy.
After hearing that, you probably don't want to come up.
Welcome, John.
Am I really welcome?
You are so welcome, yes. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. I'm John Lindback, Director of Elections on the Secretary of State's office, and you guys have been stealing all my thunder. I had all these nice remarks I wanted to say, but almost everybody has already expressed what some of our concerns are about this bill. And I apologize, Senator George, if you feel like we've been trying to undermine the bill. My view of this situation is that we've been pretty upfront about our concerns with the legislation from the start, and that's why I asked the Secretary of State to write the committee a letter back in October when we got word that you were considering having this bill drafted, so that you would know very early on that we had concerns about this legislation. And going back to that October letter, I asked that it be included in your file today. My concern as the Director of Elections and the person that hears a lot about the voters pamphlet, I have two concerns. One is, this is certainly a camel getting its nose under the tent kind of piece of legislation in terms of this very important publication, because I certainly have sympathies with regards to your efforts to get information about out about emergency preparedness. And we have our own emergency issues, as I've discussed with Representative Boone, in the field of elections, such as what happens if you have an emergency on election day, such as the flooding that occurred in Tillamook County this year. And I'd love to have the chance to discuss that with you at a later date. It's a very important subject, I believe. If we open the door to in the voter's pamphlet to information about worthy information about emergency services, there are many other programs in state government that deal with worthy issues as well. And there just doesn't seem to be a justification once you open that door to one program to deny it to another. And the most common complaint I get about the voter's pamphlet, and I make a point of asking, I get invited to talk to a lot of groups about elections, and as you know, it's a fairly controversial subject these days. And I always make a point to ask the audience, how do you feel about the voter's pamphlet? Tell me how you feel about it. And I'd encourage you, as you go out, if you don't already, and meet with your constituents to ask the same question. And I think that you will experience what I experience. People tell you, well, it's a very important document to me, but it's too big. It's too difficult to navigate. It's gotten so huge that I don't even read the measure arguments anymore. I just try to figure out who signed them. And I found Senator George's comments very interesting, that he doesn't get any evidence that people read the statement that he writes. I think that's absolutely true. I think the readership of the actual material in the voter's pamphlet is dropping, and has been dropping considerably for years as the book has gotten so large. And if I could declare an emergency on the voter's pamphlet, I would, because I completely agree with the comments that have been made here today. We have squeezed and squeezed and squeezed that book in the interest of economy so that it is almost unreadable. If I brought into you five professional public designers today and asked them to review for you the voter's pamphlet, they would, you would be astounded by the lengthy list of criticisms. And these are people that know what it takes to get somebody to read something and how to get a message across. And it's just not there now with the voter's pamphlet. So I wouldn't recommend the voter's pamphlet as an effective way of getting information across to anybody, and I'm the director of elections. I think we need to do major work on that book. There needs to be some money appropriated for a specific redesign of that pamphlet to make it more readable, and the money has been so short for the past 5 years, I've been afraid to ask for it. But I have talked about it with our budget subcommittee on a regular basis. And so I will leave my comments there. I really hope that you will consider this as sort of earnest concerns, and not just political concerns. One issue in regards to the wording of the bill itself, if you go forward and pass this bill, I do think that it should have language in it that requires emergency services agencies to pay for it, because right now it doesn't specifically require that. And I just could not afford to absorb information about other agencies into the budget of the voter's pamphlet. They would need to pay their way. So thank you.
Thank you. I just have one question, John. I don't remember, I mean, they're all different, but this is just playing devil's advocate here for our committee. What if you printed it on the back cover? Just whatever the message was. It wouldn't add a page or anything, but is that usually blank or?
The back cover usually tells people what it is. And it also includes the required addressing information for the post office. The covers of a publication are usually what tell the reader when they pick it up in the mail, what is this thing? And so it would require some redesign.
Okay. Okay, I was just wondering about using a page that's already blank or inside the back cover, whatever.
Yeah.
It's just an idea. So
yeah.
Are there any other questions? Mr. Lindbeck? Okay, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Is there anybody else signed up or once in the audience who would like to speak on this bill? Okay, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 339 and open the public hearing on Senate Bill 330.
So we're not going to do work session. We have we're open to public. We're not going to do work session.
Work session.
So we have, okay, Lieutenant Henry Ryman, Hillsborough Chief of Police.
Yes, ma'am.
Ken Murphy, OEM.
If it's posted,
and
posted.
Dave? Dave Barright, Oregon State Sheriff's Association. And one more, Gary D. Will, Turner Police Chief. Welcome. And you'll still have to introduce yourselves into the record, and you can choose who goes first and who's on first.
Co-Chair Boone, Co-Chair Verger, committee members, thank you for having us here today. Again, for the record, my name is Henry Ryman. I'm a lieutenant for the Hillsborough Police Department. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police. I'll be reading from a prepared script this afternoon. First, let me kind of talk about a couple errors in the handout that you have. You notice in some areas it says Senate bill, in some areas it says House bills. That's part of my, open-mindedness, since this is a committee, so
okay.
A joint committee. This bill was developed by a wide range of public safety stakeholders that represent emergency services at the local and state level. Groups participating in the drafting process for this legislation include Oregon Emergency Management, Oregon State Sheriff's Association, Oregon Association Chiefs of Police, Fire Marshal's Office, Oregon Fire Chiefs Association, Oregon Department of Forestry, Oregon State Police, and City County Insurance are some of the drafts members of this legislative piece. The purpose of this compact is to provide voluntary assistance among all governments in responding to any event or imminent disaster that overextends the ability of local governments to assist, reduce, counteract, or remove the danger. Assistance include but are not limited to rescue, fire, police, medical, communication, and transportation services and facilities to cope with problems which may require the use of special equipment, trained personnel, or personnel in large numbers not locally available. The key provisions of Senate Bill 330, it is designed to create a venue for all local governments to either request or to respond to requests for assistance in non-declared emergencies. This creates an interstate mutual assistance compact understanding which streamlines the process by which local government may request assistance from other local governments under certain circumstances. This bill is set in permissive language. This is a may and a not shall bill. Thus, the bill avoids the creation of a mandated response and allows local officials to determine if they are capable of assisting to what degree, the type of assistance or resources, and for what duration. It also takes the consideration of existing agreements. Senate Bill 330 does not supersede or impact existing mutual aid agreements and does not preclude jurisdictions from entering into new agreements to which a local government is party or may become a party to. We also have a process. Senate Bill 330 is intended to address non-reimbursable assistance from jurisdictions to a requesting local government. The response is voluntary and may be terminated at any time. Senate Bill 330 does provide a venue for financial reimbursement if needed. This bill also covers benefit requirements. Senate Bill 330 requires that the responding agencies provide all applicable benefits, including workman's compensation and other benefits normally available to the employee. The burden of the benefit, the compensation, remains with the home agency. We also cover license and certification portability. Senate Bill 330 acknowledges and recognizes the responding employee's license, certificate, permit, or other documentation that is evidence of qualifications and a professional or technical skill. The challenge of preparing for disasters and responding to events has become complicated since 9/11 for public safety. Emergency declarations by local governments allow them to implement state statutes that facilitate rapid sharing of equipment, personnel, and other resources through the Oregon Emergency Management. Communities often, however, face situations that threaten the well-being of their citizens and or events that challenge the response capabilities of their public safety infrastructure. In most cases, these incidents or events rarely rise to the level of a declared emergency, preventing local officials from availing themselves to resources that may be available in other jurisdictions within the state. As a result, communities are seeking alternative methods to assist each other during situations and events that are not declared emergencies. The use of other local assets in non-emergency situations, however, is complicated by legal considerations that increase the increase in complexity according to the level of assistance contemplated. Information sharing efforts, for example, face few legal obstacles, while the efforts to share equipment using certified police officers or firefighters raise significant legal questions relating to cost reimbursement, license and credentialing, liability, and workman's compensation. Any mutual aid agreement that envisions the fast and efficient transfer of equipment and or personnel will require participating communities to resolve conflicts or contradictions among applicable laws and regulations. This tends to be a long and bureaucratic process. Although many communities have mutual aid agreements, these agreements tend to be specific in nature and limited to geographical boundaries. Senate Bill 330 encompasses the entire state and fills the void for all communities as they deal with non-declared emergencies. So we urge you to support Senate Bill 330.
Chair Boone, Chair Berger, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ken Murphy, the Director of Oregon Emergency Management, and my comments will be brief. Just wanted to thank the public safety professionals that really roll up their sleeves to put this together. This is, to me, one of the more true emergency preparedness issues that we deal with. We do have a compact around the United States that does very similar things to this, and this takes care of the internal issues, as Lieutenant Ryman had mentioned. So I think this is really one step closer to being better prepared, and especially even as the lieutenant mentioned, for non-declared emergencies. We always think about declarations of disasters and emergencies, but you know, nowadays it does not take much to overwhelm any organization or any community or county for that fact, dependent on circumstances. So I think this is a valuable piece to helping the state and not only public safety but city, county, and state government to serve our citizens better and help our public safety people you know, do their job to the best of their ability with help from other individuals across the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Gary Will. I'm the Chief of Police of the Turner Police Department. Co-chairs Boone and Berger and members of the committee, I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to me today. I just want to talk to you a little bit about the impact it would have on your average small town here in Oregon. For those of you who don't know, Turner's 800 feet southeast of Salem. Every 800 feet between us and them. Every day, with that distance, you would think that, you know, metro, but we're rural. But every day we face potential disasters. We're on the flight path for the Salem Airport. And for those of you who remember, 20-some years ago when the Air National Guard plane lost its fuel tank, it landed right between two houses in town. Luckily, it didn't explode, but we face the problem with planes every day. Amtrak does 70 miles an hour through Turner every day, several times a day because we have several Amtrak trains that go through. Freight trains do 55. Now, luckily, we've never had a derailment, but that's always possible. Woodburn had one several years ago, if you remember. We also have Salem's largest water reservoir in town, about 100 feet above my office on the side of a hill. couple hundred million gallons of water, I believe. So are stored up there, 100 million, I believe. So if that ever failed, either earthquake or other reasons, it would cause a major disaster in town. Day to day, of course, every year we get flooding, minor flooding most of the time. That's what we had this year so far. Last year we had moderate flooding. And when we're flooded, so is Salem. Almsville, Staten has some problems, the outlying areas, the county. And on a day-to-day basis here in Marion County, we have agreements with all the other agencies. But when they're busy, so are we. They can't come to our aid. So when there's a disaster, if we had a major flood like we did 10 years ago or so, we would need outside help to come in. I have no need to have a day-to-day agreement with Lincoln City or Albany or Corvallis or any other city. And the time to work out that agreement is not in the middle of the disaster. You know, when the president comes to town in Portland and they need extra people, they call the other cities, they may have a day or two to work out an agreement. You have that time, but in the disaster you don't. So on the day-to-day, how would it affect the average police department, public works agency, sheriff's office, is for those true emergencies, we would have that ability where we didn't have an agreement to have language that would protect us and speed up the response. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Boone, Chair Berger, and members of the committee, my name is Dave Burright. I'm the executive director for the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. And in my previous life, I was with the Lynn County Sheriff's Office and the sheriff there for 10.5 years. And several sessions ago, when I was pretty much new to this building, I was trying to work a bill through the process that I just knew everyone was going to love, and it would just sail right through. And I was taught a very important lesson. That bill never went anywhere. But, you know, thinking about today's bill, I thought, just maybe, this might be one of those, until I heard some of the comments and very appropriate questions from Senator Johnson. And then it reminded me that you have not been privy to the months of conversations that we have had in preparation of this bill. So my confidence has decreased a little bit since
then. He's not here. Would you hurry?
I'll try to do that. This bill is the right thing to do and is what government is all about. Virtually every day and many, many times a year on a regular basis, public safety agencies all across the state go out and help one another because none of us have the resources either in personnel or in equipment to get the job done by ourselves. And so when we face a situation where we are overwhelmed, we call for the other members of the public safety community to come help. I can tell you as the Lynn County Sheriff, I've had my staff literally all over the state helping other sheriffs who called for assistance. And likewise, you know, I've had Klamath County Sheriff come to us, Washington County Sheriff's Office come to us. So this happens on a very regular basis. And the sheriffs for several years have had a similar, what we called mutual aid bill. You know, you might notice this is not really called mutual aid. It's called mutual assistance. Mutual aid means something else to the fire service. And so that's why it isn't. But we have had an agreement, but yet it is very difficult to keep those up because sheriffs come and go. And it dawned on me as I was driving over for today's hearing, I've got two brand new sheriffs as of the first of the year, and ours is out of date because they have not had the opportunity to sign the agreement. So what this does is provides an overarching umbrella for the state for public safety. It does not overshadow or supersede any existing agreements. And I think the fire service is ahead of us usually on this. They have their, what they do call mutual aid agreements with adjoining agencies and so forth. I think they're ahead of the game. But as the chief very aptly said, we don't typically have an agreement with Portland or some other far-flung area. And so what this does is if there is no existing agreement, at least it gives the basics and provides the protection, provides the understanding among all the agencies about this is the way it's supposed to work. This is who's in command. This is who's responsible if something goes wrong. This is how we protect, as far as insurance and so forth goes, the people that are out there doing the work. As I said, it's really the right thing to do. And so I would really urge you to support this bill, and the sheriffs would urge that as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions?
Yeah, thank you. Of course, we have to do this. Americans are great. We all come together when somebody needs something. That's what this is about, and I agree with that. My question, though, is what is the definition of overwhelm? Where you used, like, if the president comes to Turner, you're going to be overwhelmed, but it's not, well, some may say it's a disaster, but it's not a disaster, but there is some security and some safety issues when there's that big. Is that overwhelmed? Would that fit under this, even though it's not a disaster? And then my second question to that is, if you've got a police officer from another city whose pay scale is different from yours, are they reimbursed just as they normally would be?
Chairman Boone, Chairman Berger, Representative Schaffler. Two questions. Actually, this bill goes far, far beyond true overwhelming emergencies, natural disasters. And really, during the discussions, I'm one of the persons that pushed that concept, because there are times around the state when individual agencies just need additional help. Your example of the president coming to town is a good one, because I sent our tactical team, our SWAT team, down to Jackson County when President Bush was there on a campaign tour during the last election cycle. And that was a classic example where the Jackson County Sheriff just needed additional staff. He was overwhelmed. He used up all his and needed some help. And so this bill goes beyond disasters to situations where if you just Oktoberfest and you need some additional help from other folks, this provides the framework for those people coming in. So overwhelmed has a very loose meaning, and it was, at least for our intent, was done that way on purpose. We don't want there to have to be a declaration of a disaster or a true emergency before this comes into play. We want it to be able to be used on a day-by-day basis if an agency just needs that additional help. And your second question dealt with the...
Then your team was sent down there. They were just paid their same scale as always, right?
That's right. All the pay and everything still remains the responsibility of the responding county or entity.
Very good.
In the bill, it's addressed in line 40, page 2, number 3. So a request for reimbursement must be made and agreed in writing prior to the provision of resources by the responding local government.
Madam Chair, that would mean the local community would be paying you back, the responding community back, correct? I just wanted to know about the workers' pay scale. That's all I wanted to know about.
Yes, Chairman Boone, Chairman Berger, Representative Schaffler, that's correct. Just as far as regular pay goes, the responding entity continues to do that. The reimbursement piece refers to lodging and meals and or equipment that's used up in the course of the event. And I'm glad you brought it up. A good point of this is that we do not intend on a normal basis that there be reimbursement. The public safety community just doesn't work that way. If you need help, you just call me and I go. Now, there are some times, though, when, you know, it's there's so much of an expense or whatever, maybe I need some help. And so as you read this, you'll notice if the intent is I need to have some reimbursement, then if I'm asked for help, I need to say so at the time. And let's make sure there's no understandings, because later on, that's when we do have those misunderstandings.
Senator Berger.
Thank you. I would just like to add that we were trying in another way to depoliticize what can occur. In other words, if you remember in Katrina, the real difficulty that people had understanding how the governor of the state and the mayor of a city could be in such arguments over who was going to do what and who was in charge. And so all of the structure that you'll see in the bills as they come forward to you is an effort to correct that, so that people can move in and go across borders without people on telephones trying to figure out, well, who's going to pay me? And am I going to have this when I get there, with people dying? And so I think that when, and that's the real emergency. That's, I know you have other things that are built into the bill. But if there's any way that we can take politics out of it and let you do your job, that's a very big step forward. So that's part of this bill as well.
Thank you. Representative Cowan.
Madam Chair, thank you. As one of those newcomers to the committee who has not sat through the whole process, I just want you to know that some of us also come with a background that explains to me in an instant the need for this bill. This is the practice that I've experienced in the local small communities that I've lived in all of my life here in the state of Oregon. We have always provided whatever assistance to our neighbors that were needed along the way. And probably the only discomfort I had as a county commissioner was trying to make that decision as to when it necessitated a disaster declaration and when I actually had to go through that process in order to make what we all wanted to do for each other happen anyway. So I appreciate the work on this bill, and I'd be glad to support it.
Thank you. Gone for good. Okay, well, we have, I would like to, and I know I speak for Senator Berger, my co-chair, we would like to move this bill today. So I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 330 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 330. I would like to, would anybody like to, thank you.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 330 to the House floor with a, what shall I call it?
Do pass recommendation.
With an emergency do pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Nelson moves Senate Bill 330 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Nelson.
I just want to point out that, and perhaps it'll be cured over at the Senate, but there is no sign that this bill is an emergency, and I think it should be in effect immediately. So we could add that clause from LCO maybe over on the Senate side.
Thank you. Representative Krieger? Representative Krieger, did you have a...
Well, can we send a Senate bill, that's a Senate bill, to the floor first in the House?
Maybe you just need to...
To the floor.
Motion.
To the floor.
If we had said to the floor. Maybe I'd say that. It is to the floor.
Of the Senate.
Yes.
Oh, did I say House? Yeah.
Yeah, but we fixed it.
I'm sorry.
Any further discussion? Senator George?
Aren't we moving it to the floor, too?
We're moving it to the floor.
It will be going to the Senate
floor.
Come
to the Senate floor.
Pick that up. I thought, wait a minute.
Okay. I don't want to lose the momentum here. Okay, it's been moved. And any objection? Call the roll. Clerk will call the roll, please.
Senator George L.
Aye.
Senator Johnson.
Aye.
Senator Republican Krieger.
Aye.
Senator Morissette.
Aye.
Representative Schaffler.
Aye.
Representative Cowan.
Aye.
Senator George G.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Senator Berger.
Aye.
Chair Boone.
Aye. Motion carries. Our first bill out. Thank you very much.
Do I have unanimous.
Do I have a carrier?
Would anybody like? I would.
Okay. Senate side, it will be.
On my side, sorry.
It will be Senator Berger to carry this bill. Thank you all. Thank you very much for. This was a good one. All right. Moving right along, I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Joint Resolution 6. Anybody? Nobody signed up? Okay. I'll have the administrator please read the bill.
Madam Chair,
SJR 6 proposes a revision of the Oregon Constitution to authorize the governor and the Legislative Assembly to take specified actions in case of catastrophic disaster. Refers the proposed revision to the people for their approval or rejection at the next primary election.
Is there any comments on this? Anybody have anything? I know Representative Krieger might have something to say.
I do.
Please.
If you look at this bill on the first page, under 1.3, the governor may invoke, and it goes down to 4, and at the time if the governor invokes this provision, article under section 3, the governor shall. So he's going to convene us right away if he can, especially if he can get a hold of us on the other side over here. It goes on. And what it really does, it delegates a legislative authority to take dedicated funds that we've dedicated to certain programs that we made the decision on and puts them in the hands of the governor under the auspices that this is such an emergency, we got to do it right now. And I just think that we are in error of going there, and I think that you need to get a work group together to find a way to kind of get some of that authority there within the agencies. Or, you know, if we're going to be here within a day or two, we can do it by phone. We can provide for that. But to send something out to the people in a referendum to take our authority away, which is constitutionally given to us, I cannot go there unless this is reworked.
Anybody? Senator Johnson.
I share some of those concerns and add some of my own about the 3/5 of the members of each House present are able to exercise sweeping powers. And, again, you all had the benefit of this lengthy testimony during the interim, and I'm relying on just what I'm reading, is very concerning to me. That's just worrisome.
I see the lovely Joan has joined us to answer any legal questions anybody might have. Senator George?
Maybe somebody really quickly could give us some background, because this, it seems like such a sweeping piece of legislation. It is shocking to me as I read the bill, and I was just taken back, and I appreciate Representative Krieger's comments, and it just kind of starts my concerns with this bill, and I just wondered how it came to be drafted this way.
Well, you know, and I could say a couple of words, but Senator Berger, would you like to also join in, too?
Well, it was required that we have a bill because it calls for a constitutional revision. So we had to have the bill. So if there are specific questions about it, a lot of the discussion was in trying to imagine the disaster, how the process comes along that the legislature stays in control. In other words, at first, if there was not where the governor had to call the legislature into session. And if I remember correctly, it was co-chair Brian Voklis who said that he thought that there had to be something in there that the governor immediately had to call the legislature into session. Well, maybe we weren't all going to be able to get here. In other words, some of us may be dead. And so that we had to then go over the what percentage, whether it was 2/3, how could we do business if we didn't if we were living under the rules that we have today, not in a catastrophe. So I think if you have specific questions as to why it was written the way that it is, Joan is here to help us walk through that, so that, because I would really want everybody's concerns to be satisfied. If we can't satisfy your concerns, how would we satisfy the public's? Who's going to be voting?
Representative Shaw.
Yeah, you know, the last bill we passed is great. We're all going to get together and help out, and I know we need some kind of chain of command, and you know, you got to move right now sometimes. I understand all that, but this it's 3/5 of the members who are present, so I'm confident this governor wouldn't do this, but you could have the governor say, we got an emergency, I got 5 of my pals in the legislature here, the rest aren't here, I need 3/5 vote to move this money out and do what I want to do. Now, that probably would never happen, but you know what, I don't want to give that authority just in case you get some, you know, crazy busted in the governor's house. It don't matter. I don't care, Republican or Democrats down there in Louisiana, it don't matter. But that, this is very, and I, anytime we mess with the Constitution around here, I just get scared to death, period, anyway, so.
Well, and I'll get to you next, Betsy. With all due respect to everybody, I totally appreciate your concerns, and as Senator Verger has said, we're trying not to be very political here. We're trying to be rational, reasonable, and if you had sat through some of the hearings that we did sit through in this interim committee, if you weren't depressed thinking about what could happen, you were depressed after you heard what will happen. And one of the things that will happen, you know, with a big event is some of us will not be able to get here. Sure. Maybe in all reality, very few of us will be able to get here, but we might be able to get there or there or there. And so what we're trying to do is enable a structure of command so that we can move on and get things done with what we have, and there has to be some level of trust here too. So, Senator Johnson.
Trust but verify. the problems that I have with this bill are definitional. Let's just, for example, take us back to May the 18th, 1980, when there was, depending on how you define extraordinary levels of death, there were 53 people killed. It certainly did have a severe adverse effect on the environment as ash rained down on us. But I got up that day and went to work up at the mountain. So, I mean, it's a definitional problem here. Right now, you could say that two of these conditions are extant. Mount St. Helens continues to burp out gas, and we're at war. And so the thing that concerns me is, let's assume Mount Hood belches out a little tiny whiff of steam. It's met the definition of a volcanic eruption. It may not have met your extraordinary levels of death, because I don't know what those are. It could absolutely have had a severe adverse effect on the environment. And suddenly, because of the looseness of this bill, it strikes me that the governor could call in three-fifths of the House present and raise revenue. And I just am concerned. I understand the concept, but I have to go on the four corners of the written word, and I'm just terribly concerned about how loose the four corners of the written word are, and I just would offer that for your consideration.
Madam Chair, yes. One thing that I didn't say and I should have said, and that is that there has to be an immediate expenditure of funds, and we are required by law to have a balanced budget. So in order to be able to move forward in case of a disaster, that we have to have a constitutional revision for that particular emergency. Now, I mean, you want to be sure it's an emergency. You want to be sure that the legislature is in charge. And but there's no way of getting around the fact that it has to have some revision. Now, I don't like fooling with the Constitution either, but I'm wondering if it wouldn't be a good idea for Joan to just kind of walk through the bill.
Well, ma'am, here she is.
Madam Chair, I agree with that completely, but I would like to ask, perhaps before Ms. Robinson walks through the bill, that you tell us the current state of the law. What problem are we trying to fix here? Is the law silent on the convocation of the legislature in the face of an emergency? Are there not succession plans? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out what the current status is, and you probably didn't come prepared to discuss that, and it's not fair I spring it on you. But
Senator Johnson, we would be so pleased if everyone who came to our office told us what the problem is that we're trying to solve. That, you know, I would
okay. Guilty as charged.
Co-chairs of this committee, I'm Joan Robinson from Legislative Council. As I understood the interim committee's concerns, they were focused on a Katrina-like event in which the committee heard testimony about how many zillions of dollars the state of Louisiana had to spend right away. There, of course, the legislature can call itself into a special session, and the governor can call it into a special session in case of emergency. Those are the two ways of convening the legislature outside of the regular session. And if a catastrophic disaster happened, and presumably the governor or the legislature would do that, I believe that the thought behind SJR 6 was, well, suppose there aren't enough members of the legislature who can make it. Suppose a tsunami takes out everything from the Willamette Valley West. What are we going to do? what provisions of the Constitution would perhaps get in the way of the legislature being able to do anything. And so the provisions of the Constitution that would perhaps, and of course it's difficult to draft without knowing what the emergency is going to be or might be, but for example, the Constitution requires that the legislature assemble in Salem. Well, suppose there's a catastrophic disaster and Salem is gone. I'm sorry you won't have your staff, but surely you should be able to have staff.
We're only going to have Schaffler if we do that.
So that was the as I understood the request to me, it was to figure out which parts of the Constitution, and these are primarily procedural issues, might the state want to overcome in the event of this Katrina-type disaster. And I agree with you. I mean, it's extremely difficult to envision the disaster. The question, I guess, is how far can you go in making people comfortable planning for something when you don't know what it's going to be or when it's going to be or how bad it's going to be or who's going to be the governor? That's not my problem. That's your problem. Thank you.
Senator George.
John, I think we went down this road before. I mean, everybody on this committee knows I've had heartburn with this thing from day one because I tried to show a video showing the confiscation of the guns for law-abiding citizens in Katrina, you know, in New Orleans, and was a little bit concerned that something like that with these extra powers in the governor's office with plenty of money to buy something really could get out of control in a hurry. And people act differently when things do get tough. But the question is, what happens under this scenario? It just happened to pop into my mind. If, in fact, the first act of terrorism, line 15, page 1, takes out the governor, does the next person in charge have the authority if this, in fact, was passed by the people?
Yes. This revision of the Constitution would only affect the parts of the Constitution that are specifically mentioned in it. It's very narrowly drawn from that point of view because I think that's what the Interim Committee wanted. So the rules of succession to the governor are set out in other parts of the Constitution. They're not affected by this. So it would be the normal order of succession, the Secretary of State, the whatever it is, the Speaker, the President, I don't know. And there's nothing in here that would enable anybody to confiscate guns. There might be statutes currently on the books, and guns are not my area, that allow the governor has certain statutory powers in the case of an emergency that don't really have anything to do with SJR 6. SJR 6 is about suppose the legislature needs to meet. Also, I think when I was first asked to draft this, people were concerned about the possible passage of measure
48.
48. Mm-hmm. 46. Yeah, the spending limit one. And what would happen if that were in place and the legislature needed to come up with a lot of money in a very short period of time. And we can't draft in anticipation of a constitutional amendment that hasn't passed. And as it turns out, it didn't pass. So that's not dealt with here. But the kinds of things there. Suppose the legislature decides it needs to raise taxes and it needs to do it right away. The Constitution currently prohibits an emergency clause on a bill raising revenue. No, excuse me, on a bill regulating taxation or exemption. So that's something that can be specifically overridden under SJR 6 because it was deemed to get in the way of the legislature being able to react rapidly to the emergency. And that, I mean, anything that you want to have in or out of the resolution obviously is a policy question. I think that what the Interim Committee was trying to do was get to a place where the legislature could respond if Portland were wiped out.
Madam Chair.
Just a minute, we have a few people before you. Okay. Representative Schaffler.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll have a rainy day fund we can draw from. On that rainy day.
I'm working on it.
Well,
you know.
Something gives me a little problem. You know, look at A, it says use any money appropriate from the general fund to executive agencies for the current biennium, regardless of the legislative express purpose of the appropriation. Less general fund money, over 60%, is in the education. And to make that decision, that's going to affect kids in schools. The real question is, how are you going to get more money? Because you're not going to have enough with what's in there. And it's going to require us to make that decision eventually anyway, within as short a time as we can get here. If we're going to have to raise some other revenue source, the governor himself can't do that.
That's right.
So I think this thing just really needs to be a lot of work to do. I think it can be done, but maybe not the way it's envisioned here.
Senator Morissette?
I don't remember the discussion about the powers of martial law. Did we talk about that?
I'd have to go back to the record.
In case of emergency, it seems to me one of the normal procedures is to declare martial law, and you suspend a lot of things, you know, that takes care. And I don't know if that, what kind of extraordinary powers that gives the governor in terms of doing what's necessary to keep, public safety and peace and so on and so forth. Because if things are so chaotic that we can't function, the legislature can't figure out taxation in normal times, let alone, that could be a... But I understand what you're saying, and under the best of conditions, the legislature could assemble in a reasonable quorum and we could make some decisions. But I'm just wondering about the martial law thing, and I don't know if we talked about that.
Well, I just was, as we're hearing this, I was thinking about how long it's taken us discussing this, what if, what if, what if, and Representative Krieger talked about kids in school. I think we're talking about a disaster of the size and scope that there won't be, schools will not be in session, and things will be in disarray. And I think this is, point is, and I do understand the concerns, but the point is to be as prepared and have something in place that can just go pop when we need it, and a decision made and it happens, so that there's not this hang-up they experienced down in the South during the Katrina disaster. And not that that wasn't bad, but what we're talking about here is a lot worse in many aspects than the flood in Katrina, because we're bound, and I tried to get fire into it, for example, and that wasn't bad enough, but... The point is if we have the earthquake, that will be fire. We'll have a tsunami, an earthquake, that will be flooding, and just total devastation. And it will, a lot of death and destruction, and I think that was the point of it, was to be able to enact it immediately so that we don't have to start to call ourselves into special session and try to get everybody here however they go. The only way you're going to get here is by horse or drop in by a helicopter if you happen to be in it at the time, which we're all going to be at Senator Johnson's office to do just that.
Helicopter Full Employment Act. I love it.
There you go.
Well,
go ahead, Senator George. Did you?
Yeah, I'm going to raise the same question I raised in committee, and that was, we've got to be able to sell this thing, and I don't think this is saleable. Because if I could ask the other George down here, if you were going to attack this thing, how would you attack it? Oh, my goodness, I can think of a million ways. And so if we're going to run anything out, we better soften it up, and it better sound like something very reasonable with a few prudent protections for the civil rights of our citizens. I'm surprised ACLU isn't in here.
I said that to comment. I'm sorry about that. But Joan didn't want to answer that.
Well, okay.
Well,
and I guess...
I'm explaining the resolution if you actually want me to.
Well, wait a minute. The martial law thing, I mean, first of all, disasters are matters of degree. I mean, you know, you're talking about the worst-case scenario. It could be a three-quarter worst-case scenario. It could be a half worst-case scenario, and so on. And so there's got... I think the commander-in-chief, the governor, the president, someone has got to be in charge. Someone has got to act and say, this is... an extraordinary situation. I'm in charge. I'm going to take money from here. I'm going to put it over there. We're going to do this, and we're going to do that, and that's that. Now, after the fact, if you challenge them and you win, fine. But someone's got to act in the emergency. And again, to me it makes sense. I don't know if we even need this. If martial law can be declared by the governor and they can do what they need to do, that takes care of it. No?
Well, co-chairs, Senator Morissette, I think... And I'm not the expert on martial law, but I believe the martial law provisions are statutory, and the governor is given a lot of powers, but he doesn't have the power to suspend the Constitution. And the Constitution, for example, under the Constitution, if the legislature, you have a catastrophic disaster in November of this year, the legislature has just left. Well, excuse me, has left 4 months ago.
Don't say that.
That was in July. Has left 4 months ago. The budget is in place and everything like that. you have a catastrophic disaster, as Representative Boone says, it basically closes down schools in a number of places. The governor does not have the authority by himself to take general fund money that was appropriated by for schools by the legislature and spend it on highways if the first priority is let's get a highway open. Under this resolution, the governor would have that authority until the legislature came in and said, no, we don't want you spending. So it would just be the general fund money that were monies that were appropriated for the biennium by the legislature. The governor would be able to shift those pots. The legislature, but that's the only thing he would be allowed to do, is shift general fund money pots and lottery pots within the constitutional dedication of lottery monies. So if he decided, yes, the legislature said that this much lottery money should go for this biennium to economic development, but I really need it over here to rebuild these schools.
Right, that's why then, I said that.
Then he could make that decision on his own before the legislature got here. But he would be required to call the legislature in special session within 30 days, and they could, if they didn't like it, put a stop to it immediately.
And Madam Co-Chair, if you guys remember the discussion, we were told, I believe, I shouldn't use his name, we were told by an authority that it might be easier under emergency to ask for forgiveness than permission. So literally, the governor will take action as is appropriate to deal with it. You know, Ken and the guys are going to go out and do what they've got to do, and then we'll all try to sort it out later. And Measure 48 folks didn't pass. And that was one of the things that was kind of the main driver behind here, is if that passes, which at the time we thought it was going to pass.
Some of us did.
I was hoping.
See, we're getting chaotic right now. I'm going to call an emergency. Keep going.
No, that's basically it. Yeah. Things have changed dramatically. And with that in mind, and the fact that I do believe that the governor and all of us who could get here, maybe we might have to pay that $95 to ride our four-wheeler in here and wear a helmet, but at least we could get here. And the main thing is that it's easier to ask for forgiveness than it is for permission. I think the permission is going to be the problem getting this past the public.
May I just add something to that brilliant statement? I agree. And if we're going to give the governor some power, give him the power under martial law to do what has to be done, and then we will get here and straighten it out, and we can, you know, if we can get here. But I think this is going to be very difficult to sell because there are so many nitpicking details that everyone can hate somewhere in this thing. And I agree totally. When it really happens, someone is going to step forward and say, "This is what we're going to do." And at some point, we'll reconcile the whole thing, and blame can, you know, you did this and you did that, but we have to have a simple, definite plan.
That's what this is all about, but I know it's just...
Okay.
Representative Shoffley, and then
Chair,
Senator Berger.
I'm not prepared to vote on this today, but...
We're not going to vote.
Thank you. But in all seriousness, about the Rainy Day Fund, I mean, martial law is statutory, so... The rainy day fund will be too. That's not going to be a constant. If we can get $1 billion, which that may be a dream of ours, and maybe it's not going to happen, in that bill specify that the governor has the ability in time of emergency to draw. But it has to. We have to define emergency and overwhelming and all the things that Senator Johnson was worried about. How he or she, Republican, Democrat, Independent, will be able to get at that money in case of an emergency. That way you avoid, I would not send this out to the voters. I think it would crash and burn for a lot. And I'm surprised the ACLU isn't here, too.
Excuse me, co-chairs, just to correct raise a legal point. If you have a statutory rainy day fund, there is no way you can grant the governor statutory authority to spend that money however he wants to spend it, because the Constitution requires that monies may not be drawn from the Treasury except pursuant to an appropriation made by law. Only the legislature makes an appropriation.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had $1 billion rainy day, and that's exactly the kind of thing that this is designed to give you flexibility on, I guarantee you that there is no civil right impacted by this. And I'm not testifying in favor of it or opposed to it, and I won't tell you how I feel about civil rights because it doesn't agree with a whole bunch of you, but it's not what it's about. It's what you, I mean, legally, it's not what it's about. But politically, that's a different story.
Mm. We're trying not to be political here. At least I am.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Well,
Senator
Yeah, I was confused by Senator George's comment that it about the citizens of Oregon, because I don't see that as something in this bill. But if we can't sell people on this committee on it, obviously we won't sell it to the public. Joan, let me ask you something. Let's say that we don't have an SJR6 and that tomorrow there is a disaster and the legislature is here in session. We are able, we're all here. We get into spending the money that's needed to try to repair Go Beach, which has just been washed completely away and all kinds of dead people. And what happens? We don't have the authority to spend money that is in the general fund without constitutional revision. So what do we do?
You can readdress.
And co-chair, if the legislature is in session, it can spend the general fund money however it wants to. So it's true that right now, until June 30th, you're operating on the budget that the last legislative assembly adopted for the current biennium.
That's right.
But you can and do make adjustments to that budget up until June 30th. I mean, you try to get them out of the legislature before June 30th. But so if it happened now, that would actually be the best kind of timing, because you would be here and you could do pretty much everything. What you would not be able to do is declare an emergency on a bill regulating taxation. So if you wanted to say to the people in Gold Beach, you don't have to pay your taxes, that would be fine, but it wouldn't take effect until the 91st day after the end of the session. But so you would have, I mean, really, if you're going to have a disaster, have it when the legislature's in session.
Okay.
So
we would not write a bill to that.
We would not be following
the system. Unless it's the building, yeah. And if you all get killed, and then that's a different
but
issue.
Could I ask another question about the taxation? So if we were in session and we're here and we have the disaster, we could not say to the people in Gobi, you do not have to pay your taxes.
You could enact a bill saying to the people in Gold Beach, you do not have to pay your taxes, but you could not constitutionally put an emergency clause on it, which means it could not take effect until the 91st day after adjournment sine die of the session.
Okay. All right.
Thank you. Any additional comments?
Just that's the type of thing we need to fix. That we can fix without all this other authority transferring it across. So when we are here, we have the authority to do that. That it wouldn't be
it
in the 90
like
days.
Sounds like we do, though, she said.
Well, not after 90 days. Not for 90 days.
Madam Chair, if we bring this back for further discussion, could I request a explanation of, I've heard the term martial law used several times here today, and could we get a kind of a legal definition of
what
that?
What can happen to
that? Of what we can and cannot do. I guess speaking from personal experience, when I've been in a position of authority and something has happened, we've had roads wash away in areas that were not county authority, but people were stranded. And the answer is fix the thing, and then we'll figure out what to do about it. But I would like to make it legal to do that.
Is there any further discussion?
Well, I guess I would ask Joan. I was going to ask the AG. Who are you going to ask about martial law?
Well, Harrison is the person in our office who does the emergency services martial law stuff. So I will ask him, or I will send him to your next meeting, or whatever you want me to do. But I mean, I got involved with this because I do the Constitution and the financing, and this was primarily a financing issue. How are we going to get money in a disaster, given the constitutional constraints the constitutional constraint that the governor is not allowed to spend money unless it's authorized by the legislature, and the legislature is not allowed to raise money with an emergency clause until, you know, all of those constitutional constraints that are in here, and then the procedural things, like if there aren't 3/5 of you here, you don't have a quorum, that kind of stuff, and you have to meet in Salem. So
Madam Chair, Joan, let me ask you, if we formed a work group and worked on this with the workload that's downstairs, when do you think that we would get another resolution out for us to talk about?
April.
After February 26th. February 26th is the introduction deadline for bills. We have approximately 1,700 requests pending for bill drafts. Mm-hmm. They now take priority.
Right. So how long after February 26th, though?
Well, that would depend. I mean, it would depend on what you wanted to do, on whether the work group, I mean, I certainly would not have to be at a work group meeting. If somebody could go through the resolution and figure out which sections of the Constitution are actually involved, which it says in there, and then read those sections, and then you see it's nothing about guns, it's nothing about civil liberties and all that stuff. But if that kind of, if you want me to be involved, then it would be longer after February 26th. So I can't tell unless I know what you're going to do.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, Madam Chair, I think that probably the discussion needs to be whether this committee is really interested in having a resolution at all. Because if there's no sense in committee members spending a lot of time on a work group and coming up with something that they don't think that you can sell to the public, and developing a constitutional revision which would be required. So,
Madam Chair, I've been listening to the concerns that were raised, but on the other side of that issue, if we truly don't have the authority to meet outside the city of Salem, and we know that there are places that are geographically at risk in the state, don't we have the obligation to make whatever revisions we need to make so that the necessary government of the state of Oregon can continue in some manner when it is the most needed, which is times of catastrophe?
Things we can do.
I guess I'm just feeling that at least we need to address those pretty pressing issues in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, I have no problem with our, you know, making it so we can meet outside of the Capitol in times of emergency. And I have no problem with changing it so that the governor can get access to available discretionary funds like a rainy day fund. But the reapportioning of money with three-fifths of whoever's there, that makes me skittish. So if we need to change the Constitution to allow the governor to get access to discretionary funds in a rainy day fund in time of emergency, that, I think, it makes sense. But the three-fifths thing of whoever's present, that bothers me. And meeting outside of the Capitol in time of emergency, I have no problem with that either, because this whole building could fall down.
Well, what would you do? Would you want people to have some other person represent them just in the case of emergency? I don't know that the public would like that.
I don't know, Senator. It's a vexing one, I freely admit.
Well, Madam Chair, one of the things that I suggested early on that didn't have any traction was that there be alternative individuals to represent. Okay, county commissioners appoint legislators under certain circumstances, or recommend at least, but I think maybe we need to think of an alternative way to choose representatives in time of emergency if there are not enough legislators around, or we need to replenish before an election. And maybe some other body, maybe a county commissioner group, could legally appoint someone to the legislature. Instead, you know, the governor appoints.
Well, they do that now.
Well, no, they only recommend. Well, they do.
They do.
Governor can appoint if the county commissioner.
Madam Chair,
Representative Cowan.
If there's a vacancy, recommendations are made by the political parties representing whatever political party that vacancy came about to the boards of commissioners of the affected counties, and in a proportionate number to the share of the electorate, and they make that appointment. That's a very cumbersome process if you don't have enough people to convene a legislative process in an emergency, not to mention that, from my perspective, county commissioners will be rather busy if they're able to function in the kind of disaster that's described here. So I'm really very comfortable with the idea of meeting with two-thirds of whomever could possibly be wherever they needed, whatever. Or if from geographical constraints, people could actually manage to get here. I mean, we have to understand that when you're talking catastrophic disaster, we may not have the roads or the bridges or the things that will make it physically possible for us to be here. And connecting by telephone is a swell idea if we still have telephone lines. So I understand the concerns around the fear of spending money inappropriately, I guess, but I don't have a problem with the structure that's laid out in this bill for actually convening a legislature in wherever we have enough facilities to do that.
We're talking about a really bad event and having a plan in place that can just happen. I understand your concerns, Representative Shoffler, too, and I think this isn't something that I envision being taken lightly, like a little tremor or something like that. I mean, it's something really bad, and I know, Joan, you worked hard on this, and I know you're all working hard down there, and that's what it's about. I think it'd rarely be, you know, if it's used once, if ever, at least it would be in place for that. Senator Johnson.
Could there be, and I'm just making this up now, not having heard the benefit of the testimony, but could there be some kind of dispersed situation with 10 or 12 satellite phones located strategically around the state? I mean, I'm just trying to think of other alternatives because we're having trouble sitting here, the few of us that are here selling this. I agree with Senator George. I don't know how you sell it to the public. And I'm just trying to, on the fly, think up alternatives to communications. I don't know enough about satellite phones to really know whether or not they'd be efficacious, and I'd have to defer to Mr. Murphy.
Kim, yeah, please come up and join the fray.
Chair Boone and Chair Berger and Senator Johnson, we do have satellite phones around the state. Not as many as I'd like, but hopefully we'll continue to buy them and place them. We also have a network of amateur radio that can be used in the same mode. And just for everybody's reference, you know, if you need to send a Word document, a PowerPoint file, you can do that over amateur radio. So, you know, if we have to transfer documents, that can be done. And we are, you know, obviously moving into the world of voice over the Internet protocols. And we're doing some limited testing just geographically, you know, if those type of things can be used for emergency communications. But we do have a number of them. And then we also have the government emergency telephone system, which is a separate switch from the public switch that's pretty well populated around the state. So we have numerous redundant systems to use.
Madam Chair, if we had a catastrophic disaster and we needed to pull our wonderful volunteers in for our amateur radio, we call them the rats, in Lincoln County, all of these people who are in place to do these kinds of things, would you want to convene folks like that to help the legislature debate what needed to be happening or to take care of the people who were in jeopardy at that particular moment in time?
Chair Boone and Chair Berger and Representative Cowan, that's one of the many tasks. You know, as I think everybody's really aware, you know, when you get into a catastrophic event, it's going to be very demanding on what you do first. And I think, you know, and I'm not just saying that because I'm here, but I think one of the first things, you know, that I think about, that we talk about, is what is our continuity of government plan? If legislators are killed, if this building is not here, and even to the point of how do we determine where they're at so we could get them by helicopter, we could get them to an amateur radio, we could get them to some device, satellite phone or whatever, you know, to be able to have enough legislators to be able to help us, you know, make decisions and deal with the event.
Or Senator Morissette.
We could put little tracking devices on our persons.
We're all going to get microchips.
Okay. Now, I mean, I'm experiencing a little frustration, but and I understand it's we've got a lot of new people trying to play a really hard catch-up game. I guess I want to ask you, the new people on the committee, do you understand how long that we took to get here and our situation now? If we don't go forward on our pre-session filed package, which was designed to make this committee work, it potentially ended at the end of the interim. We petitioned hard and fast for leadership to please continue it. We had an agreement to, everybody said we were in agreement. These were the bills we wanted to put in place right out of the chute. We wanted to find a new home for Oregon Emergency Management. We had a couple of dry run events that were catastrophic, you know, in our districts. I won't deny that. They're not as bad as some might be, but they were, and they were chances for us to see, oh my gosh, what's going to happen if something really, really big happens. So that in that sense, we were lucky we didn't lose a lot of people. In my district, in Senator Johnson's, we lost a lot of livestock, and that's almost like losing family members for dairies. A lot of stress, whole businesses go under, things like that. That's not what we're talking about here. You know, that we have a system in place. The Oregon Emergency Management helped us out. We had a lot of help from all the players, and we're trying to plan for the big one. And it's, you know, we have a very limited time frame that our committees are working on. We're a month away from when things are ending here and really have to start moving. We've got a bunch of other bills coming up too, and we don't know all of them yet. So what would you have us do at this point?
Okay.
Senator Johnson.
It strikes me, just listening to the comments and counting noses on this committee, you don't have enough votes to move the bill. And so I would recommend that maybe you break this down into some work groups that include members that work during the interim and new members, and you maybe take another shot at drafting tighter language. I think the concept is one that we all intellectually understand, but it's the words on the page that give us pause. And that might be one methodology to salvage the work that you've done during the interim. But I just don't think you've got enough to move it out right now. And if you try and take an all or nothing, you may end up with nothing. The work group might be a way to try to
we've been discussing that. And my concern, and I agree, my concern is the time frame. And if we, when we get a new product, we'll have from the end of February deadline, you know, 4 weeks. And
Madam Chair, let me just follow up by making the observation that despite your heroic efforts to try to talk this committee into the bill, and we're not there, I think passing out a bill that's doomed on arrival doesn't make very much sense. You've got to convince 3 million Oregonians that this is a good idea, and so far we haven't been able to convince 9 folks here.
I know.
I think it's good for fresh eyes to look at something like that. This is a good dry run because, you know, the group that met earlier, and let's face it, a lot of it was prompted by Measure 48. Senator George was concerned about that, and that was a big topic of discussion. If Measure 48 passes, we're in really big trouble for an emergency. That, to me, as I remember, was a lot of the reason why we got into this. I'm not overly concerned that fresh eyes are looking at it and finding fault with some of the things that we put together. Better now than later that we see some of the problems and fix them. I think we can fix them. You know, there are some things that I think we can do.
Right.
Move out of Salem, for one.
Yep.
Figure out a way for communications. That's a great idea.
And the governor to access a new rainy day fund.
Yeah. I mean, we can do. I think we're in good shape.
We don't even have a rainy day.
That would be a big incentive to have one.
But big incentive. Talking about a fund that we don't have.
Well, we built. Well.
Okay. Well, I'll exercise the power of the gavel, and I'll convene a work group on this.
I'm a little afraid what she's going to do with the gavel.
I'll ask for volunteers. Krieger? Callan? Anybody else?
You need somebody from the Senate.
Right. I'm looking at you. Okay. I know you're busy, but you have a lot of concerns. Where do you want to, should we name one of the Georges?
Were one of the Georges participatory during the, well, I know one of the Georges was and one was
senior,
not.
Senior was.
So if Senior was participatory during the interim, he may have a valuable historical perspective that would inform the discussion. Besides, when you're out of the room, you stand the higher possibility of being appointed to the
Are
subgroup.
Are you respectfully declining the job?
I'm just saying the historical perspective of Mr. George might be useful.
But my concern is then they may not address your concerns.
Then come back and include me if you want to.
Anyone else? Can't. Add to the list.
Be there.
Okay.
I'll be there. I can do it.
Nelson?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Oh, you were going to ask us new people how we felt about this, but kind of new. Old to the legislature, new to you. But this reminds me of making my living trust, except I didn't have 3.5 million family members together trying to determine who got what and when and where and how. And but I was able to make the decision of if I was going to be kept on life support, that three physicians, you know, could make a decision so that my children didn't have to. I'm just saying that, you know, this is a critical issue. This is kind of the living trust of the state, and safety is our top priority. I think this is very important. I thank you and Senator Berger for doing this. I mean, I think it's very important. And let's proceed and find out what's right and do what's right so things turn out right in Oregon versus Louisiana.
Thank you. And thanks to everybody for agreeing to do this. Yes, I will close the public hearing on SJR 6. Joan, thank you very much. Appreciate your help. Thank you, Ken. And, put her in. At this time, I'd like to ask Johnny Mack and Elizabeth Goulard from Temecula Community College for a brief presentation on their community college program. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Chair Boone and Chair Berger, members of the committee. I'm Liz Goulard, and I serve as Vice President and Chief Academic Officer at Chemeketa Community College. With me is Johnny Mack, who is the Associate Dean for Emergency Services and Criminal Justice at the college. And we appreciate the enormity of your work and the complexity of it, and also the time that you have available to do your work. So we'll be very brief. Representative Nelson invited us here today to share just a few brief comments and extend an invitation to you in the spirit of helpfulness. So with that, I'll just turn to Johnny and let him take about a minute of your time.
Hi. First of all, I'd just like to maybe invite the committee to hold...
Your name first.
I'm sorry.
Just for the record.
Johnny Mack. I would like to invite the committee maybe to have a meeting out at our regional training center. Some of you may be familiar with it. Marion County Fire District wanted to build a regional training facility for fire, police, and EMS out in Brooks. And in November, we took over the operations of that. And listening to the bill that you passed earlier, we're very interested in helping out, creating those partnerships. One of the emphasis that we have is fire and EMS and criminal justice should all be working together. And that's one of the reasons why we took over the training facility out there, is to get all three together and working as a team. And eventually we hope to have our academic programs all out there, both fire, criminal justice, and EMT paramedic, so we can actually start training together and work together. So we would like to invite you out to maybe see the facility. We have the ability to create some of the disasters that you've talked about already, like as a rail card leak, or a train derailment. There's also confined space stuff. We can set up urban search and rescue and just give you a tour of the facility and what resources are here to help provide maybe training for some of the stuff that you guys were talking about today. We also have the backup EOC for Marion County that is actually out at Brooks as well, so we could even set up an EOC out there and actually run some mock scenarios if you'd like.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you for wading through the committee and thank you.
That was great stuff.
The eye-opener, wasn't it?
Yeah. I really appreciate you passing the bill. I'm actually also on the state EMS committee, and we're facing some of the same issues there, that there's no statewide EMS plan in a disaster on which medics move up and, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So I think it's really a needed piece of legislation.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Is there any other
just before we go, I'd just like to tell the committee some of the bills that we heard in the last meeting. There were some amendments that are going to be coming to you. And so I have not asked presenters to come back again. You've heard the presentation. So if you'll be getting the amendment, so please read it carefully, because the next time I'd like to just open with a work session so that we can move forward.
Thank you. Anybody else? Stand adjourned.